Seen you locked and changed, didn't ease my pain. Left me feeling ashamed out in the rain. Can't explain the pain, how I stay sane. Don't like the game, will it ever change? Everyone, I am Dr. Tommy Watson, and welcome to another episode of Resilient Stories Podcast, where we share the grit and glory behind the stories of amazing people like you who have bounced back from adversity and failure to want to live the best lives on purpose. Today's show is being sponsored by $1 Million Business Pathway, where we believe everyone has a story to tell and sell. If you want to learn how to tell and sell your story, go to tawatson.com under the programs and product page and click on $1 Million Business Pathway to get yourself started. So, folks, are you guys ready for another amazing episode today? Joining me, I have the one and only Miss Larisha Bonds. Good morning.
Hello. How you doing?
Fantastic. Thank you for joining me as well. So, Larisha, for the folks who may not necessarily know who you are, can you briefly introduce yourself and let people know how to follow you?
Yes, my name is Larisha Bonds. I'm a Jersey girl. I'm from North New Jersey. You can follow me on Instagram at Bonds Consulting, and on Facebook is Larisha Love, and I believe that's all I have.
Well, that's awesome. And you have a book, mention your book as well. We'll talk more about the book.
Yes. My book allegedly can be found at thebookallegedly.com. Yes. And my new website is larishaspeaks.com.
Awesome. Folks, get that book. It's very, very powerful. And she has an amazing story. So Larisha, as you know, we bring amazing people like yourself on and have them share their stories of how you overcome obstacles. You know, oftentimes, many of us go to the workplace and we simply work jobs, and many of us hope to, you know, retire from those places after 30 years and get the golden watch and golden parachute and kind of go off and sell off to the sunshine. But for you, you faced a challenge that was pretty remarkable. I've been spending kind of lightly there, pretty remarkable, but I'm gonna have you tell the audience in terms of what, you know, kind of what led up to your journey in having to fight the entire state of New Jersey in a lawsuit. So talk to us.
Hi, okay. Thank you so much again for having me. I do appreciate you allowing me to speak my story in your platform. I appreciate that. I don't know, you want me to start with being a child, or you just want me to start with working there and like—
Give us a little bit of your childhood background as well, but focus more so on what elevated you to this current platform you're on.
Okay, so I'm the fourth of five kids. So I was always had to speak up for myself being number four, but I grew up in a very challenging. My father passed away when I was 16, and I grew up in a single parent household. I believe I could count maybe two or three times I remember seeing my father, actually. And so he really wasn't in my life, but I always knew the situation or what was going on. I wanted different, I wanted more, and I always wanted to help people. And I said, okay, this is how I'm going to help people. I love law enforcement. I used to watch Hunter, Matlock. I was going to be an attorney. Everybody, he got everybody off, and that was my goal. So by doing the goals, they will always say, if you want to change the system in law enforcement— my mother was a correction officer. So if you want to change the system in law enforcement, join the system and help us change it from within. Be a judge, a police officer, correction officer, parole officer, probation officer, and help us change the system. Okay, I received the message, and that is what I'm going to do. So I went to school and got my degree in criminal justice. And after that, I worked with adolescents who are incarcerated between the ages of 11 to 18. And I did residential. I did case management, working with kids from birth, you know, diapers investigation. So I did that for 7 years. And I thought in 2012, I got my dream position as a probation officer for the New Jersey judiciary. And what I didn't realize at the time, that it was a nightmare. That it didn't matter the degree I had, the education that I had. I had 36 credits in my master's in public administration and a bachelor's in criminal justice. And I had a degree at Hard Knocks, because I grew up in the streets.
Yeah.
None of my education mattered. None of the president of being the organizations I was in, the activities I was in, the community service. I was a Black female, and they were going to treat me how they wanted to treat me. And me being the Black female, I was not going to let them.
Yeah.
So we had a difference of opinion, so to speak, my former employer.
Yeah, you know what? And Larisha, I appreciate you being honest and transparent about this. Tell us a little bit about, again, Most people, when we go through work experiences, we will simply either have pretty good experiences or deal with them and they kind of move on to retirement. But you chose to fight and stand up against some of the things you were facing. Tell us some of the things you were facing in the workplace and then what brought you to having them unjustly accuse you.
Okay. So in the workplace, usually sometimes, and some people have these relationships with people where you meet your best friend, you might even meet a spouse. Sure. You might be in a situation where, you know, you're in a non-toxic environment. You also may work with people who are not nice. And it's okay if you have people that you work with that are not nice. Not everybody is your friend. You're there to do a job. And you're, you know, once you do that job, you leave that job. What I came to come to realize at this job, it wasn't just necessarily people who were not nice or people who didn't necessarily like me or like themselves. These people were committing crimes. Mm-hmm. And not only were they committing crimes against me, they were committing crimes against the state of New Jersey. Mm-hmm. So after I've been going through what I was going to, I was having conversations with other people, whether it was teachers, bankers, business people, and in their respective field, and they would tell me how they would have to deal with these Karens, always being micromanaged and harassed about every little thing you do in your job. Mm-hmm. And me experiencing that, I knew, okay, I grew up in a very toxic, abusive childhood. So I knew abuse when I saw it. And mm-hmm. I always told myself I would never allow myself to be in a situation with a man putting his hands on me or being abused. Right. Abuse is not okay. Being coming from the mental health field, you understand the cycles of abuse, and I'm teaching it to the kids. So when they get out and I'm seeing it. So I was, you know, I see abuse, I report abuse, I don't engage in participating in a relationship with abuse. And I it's sad for me to admit that I was in an abusive relationship with my employer because they were abusing me.
Sure.
They were abusing their power in regards to the rules and regulations. And it was over the tiniest infractions. As me being a Black woman, I'm walking outside the building and I had my sneakers on my break instead of walking with heels, just going to go get a snack for lunch. And they're yelling at me about wearing sneakers because it's not a dress code.
Wow.
As a Black woman, I can wear sneakers outside like everybody else, all the Caucasian people. But because I was Black, you're going to try to chastise me about that. Or me and a Black coworker going down the stairs, staff only stairs, and a white supervisor seeing us jumping because she's in shock and she accused us. She thought we were going to rob her.
Wow.
You know, yeah. And that is not even the work related stuff. That was just the environment. Someone was watching Netflix and someone said, well, why are you watching that? That's a Black people movie. That's disgusting.
Mm. Wow.
So that is just like, and even with the harassment of the, you're not doing your job, you're incompetent, them trying to make me feel as though I'm unable to do the simple task of, okay, it's three parts of probation. And the first part, the major part that everybody know of, if you commit a crime, instead of being sent to prison, you're placed on probation and they supervise you in the community. You come and report to them, you take a urine test. That is the supervision piece. Then you have the child support piece. Child support is a court order. The judge said you have to pay this, you have to visitation, you violate it, you call someone. The probation in New Jersey handled that. Mm-hmm. And also with the family court piece, with the supervision and other, that's another piece. The piece that I was in was the criminal case management. Once you commit a crime, a bail investigation is completed. And when you get sentenced in the state of New Jersey, a report is done on you, who you are as a person besides the charges.
Sure.
I was responsible for doing that investigation and providing that report to the judge.
Mm-hmm.
So I had the best job. Like, I didn't supervise people in the community. I wasn't going into homes. I wasn't dealing with the child support. I was interviewing defendants of all walks of life, mm-hmm. and finding out who you are as a person besides these charges. Because anybody can put anything, as I've grown to learn by working in that corrupt environment, in a police report. Sure. Okay, well, what happened with the case? And that's what I did. And it was the same, the four pages are the same. And I would be harassed. You didn't put a the here. You didn't put an and here. You're incompetent. You can't do your job. Make it to feel like I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
That's tough.
And it's not okay. It's not okay.
Absolutely. And you know, there are people out there who probably don't necessarily know what it feels like to have to deal with discrimination. Talk to us about some of the feelings that you had to endure when you were being faced with people coming for you in that way. Well, talk about the feelings and emotions that kind of you had to deal with.
I'm going to be honest. It was anger. It was anger. And I was pissed off to the pissiveness of pissness. It was to the point where it's an assault on your intelligence when you try to treat me this way. And I, like, I'm writing my second book. And in the book, it's the piece of discrimination. The discrimination piece is like, it's minor because, okay, you train us differently, you do these other differently, but the harassment piece is so big because you're only harassing me because I'm Black.
Yeah.
So with the basis of my federal lawsuit now, when I filed my federal lawsuit, I didn't have an attorney. I paid between $3,000 and $5,000 in retainer fees to different attorneys, but no one would take my case because no one wanted to sue a branch of government in federal court.
Yeah.
So I had to literally file my lawsuit myself with no attorney. Mm-hmm. The attorney general for the state of New Jersey filed a motion to dismiss and they lost against me with no attorney. So the fight that I had to literally take on a branch of government without any help or any assistance from the people in law enforcement or the attorneys who I came to who saw that this was a anger. It was frustrating because what happened to me should have never happened in the first place.
Sure.
But the basis of that lawsuit was, are you familiar with FMLA? Sure. Family Medical Leave Act? You cannot be written up or punished because you on it. My daughter has asked, well, she has a medical condition where I was on approved FMLA. I had to get approved by the doctor every 6 months, certified, and I had to go through this process, which they forced me to go through, so they couldn't write me up. Then I reported a supervisor for being racist, and guess what they did? They wrote me up for being out, taking care of my sick child. A Caucasian woman would not be written up for being out on approved FMLA for taking care of their sick child. But as a Black woman, I'm expected to sit there and put up with that. Yeah. And even the union said to them, when we had our guerrilla court, the departmental hearing with the departmental charges, you know you can't write her out. She has FMLA. There's nothing, you can't do what you're doing. It's a federal and state crime. The response of the judiciary was to sue us then. Mm-hmm. That was their, sue us.
Wow. That's unbelievable. You know, so as you're going through this process, did you have any mentors or guides to kind of help you navigate the system of dealing with the state of New Jersey? Do you have anyone there to kind of help you?
No, I wish. Honestly, I have a criminal justice degree. I always wanted to be an attorney. I took the LSAT. I got into a law school, but I got into law school in Michigan when I had moved to Missouri and got into a grad school there. So I went to school for grad school, but I always had in my plans I was going to law school. I understand the law to a point. I don't want to say I'm a genius when it comes to understanding the case point, but my professors in school used to tell me, you should be a lawyer. The way you think and how you can determine, this is the Matt versus Ohio. What makes this a constitutional issue? Oh, this, and I can easily articulate that. And a lot of law students can, and they will always tell me, you would be perfect. Because I understand that FMLA, you can't do this, and you did it, that's a violation. Yeah. And I was able to, I couldn't get an attorney, so I know the system. I got a paralegal who helped me with the complaint and basically said, you have to write the stuff here. And the paralegal helped me with the complaint piece, but I did it all myself. So if you like Google my name, you see the first complaint, it's a mess, but it's my mess. I did it, I did it myself. And it was just me knowing you can't do this. And again, they would get away. I understood it. Like I put this in my first book. The only rights I had as a Black female is my right to hire an attorney to fight for them when it comes to these laws and things like that. And because I didn't have that money or that help, I had to do it myself. You cannot violate my rights. Sure. Like, no.
So, that's powerful. So as you look back today on your darkest day, what kept you fighting? What kept you going at it?
My kids and my husband. Like, yeah. At the end of the day, okay, growing up in the poor environment where I literally got whooped for looking out of the window. And as a kid, I didn't understand it. I couldn't go outside and play with the other kids, but I couldn't even go out to look outside and see them playing because my parents were scared of the bullets not having no name. I grew up in Newark in the 80s.
Sure.
So me having to understand everything I fought to try to make sure that my kids would not have to go through any of the struggles, bearing the parent at 16, my father died of AIDS in 96, 93, 94, 95, 96, three, him and his siblings. for me having to come from that background and duck bullets and literally try to survive everything. And I do everything in their system they told me I had to do in order to be successful and get the American dream. And that still wasn't good enough. It was the color of my skin.
Sure. Sure.
No, absolutely not. Like, no.
So as you look back today, how would you say this whole ordeal has kind of shaped you as a person?
It put me in my purpose. I always wanted to be a motivational speaker. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you noticed, but I'm a talker. So mm-hmm. I've always liked to talk. Mm-hmm. So I remember in elementary school, I think I was maybe fourth grade and someone was upstate. I was like, wow, they're getting paid to speak. Oh, you get paid to do this? My grandmother used to call me Chatty Cathy. Like that was like, I can talk. My first speaking engagement was actually this year on my grandmother's birthday. And I actually have a plaque with her birthday on it. And I knew that was done for my grandmother literally was watching over me. Right. So my first paid speaking gig was on my late maternal grandmother's birthday. Yeah. So it just puts me in my purpose and make me get, because again, when you get it, you have to talk about something. And instead of me just talking about, now I have a active to, them coming after me, not just me in the workplace and it helped me form my business, but me fighting for help with my nephew and getting him assistance. It's literally giving me, again, I wanted to help people and be a regular schmegler, a PTO president, soccer mom, basketball, dance class. I wanted to give my kids the light. I always wanted dance class. Yeah. I thought every little girl should go to dance class. I couldn't afford it. The dance class I had was Soul Train on Saturday.
Yeah.
My daughter, 2 years old, dance. She's going to dance class. Like I'm, and then I had to deal with all this aggravation. My blood pressure was 200 over 100. One time I left work to go to the doctor with the stress. Wow. And it's like, okay, I can't let this kill me. I have to kill this and be the best version of myself. How do you do that? How do you take that anger and turn it into, you know, your mess and turn it into a message? How do you take this test and turn it into a testimony? And I literally was like, I can't go the way that I'm going. I have to do something different. And it's literally the last past couple of days, I'm really saying what my message is supposed to be and how I am supposed to help people. So that's it good. Wasn't necessarily what I wanted to do, but I'm doing it.
Absolutely. That's good. I love it. So Larisa, you know, as you look back over the last 2 years, we have a lot of people who've gone through some challenging times, lost loved ones, lost finances, lost possessions, lost hope in many situations out there. But those folks who are out there listening right now, what words of encouragement can you give them to let them know that a brighter day is going to come?
The first thing that I have to say is that be honest with your emotions. A lot of times, especially working with kids, people are embarrassed or ashamed of saying what their emotions are. No, you have a right to think and you have a right to feel.
Sure.
If you survive COVID alone, like I feel like crying, that is a testimony in of itself.
Yeah.
My uncle who danced with me at the father-daughter dance, he passed away in January of 2022 because of COVID.
Oh, sorry.
Like we were super close. My brother was murdered literally 2 months after I was illegally fired from my job.
Wow.
These last past years have been, I don't want to say the worst and best, but the trying and the emotions. And I make sure that I feel all of those emotions. Like even being illegally fired, not having to be able to provide for my kids. I couldn't get my kids the book bags for school or school clothes coming in September because I didn't have money, or I couldn't get a job because certain individuals were making sure that I couldn't get one. Mm-hmm. So feel those emotions. It's okay. Just don't stay there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not okay to stay there. Okay. You're mad. You're upset. You're pissed off. What are you going to do next? You mm-hmm. can't stay there. You have to do something with that. And what I've learned to do with my anger, okay, what are you going to do? When I was illegally fired, okay, what are you going to do now? I started my business. I had my book within 6 months.
It's good.
Within 1 year, I've had so many different accomplishments. I was just sitting back and reviewing like, wait a minute, I've accomplished so much in the last past year. Being in business, it'll be 18 months in January that I'm like, I am thebomb.com and I didn't even know it. I'm in my emotions, not being where I know I'm supposed to be, not getting the media attention, not getting the help for my nephew, him being unjustly incarcerated. They're refusing to let his attorney into the prison to see him. Feel that. You have that right. But what mm-hmm. are you going to do about that?
Mm-hmm.
I tweeted Kyrie Irving and said, can you please help me? Mm-hmm. And was blessed with a donation from my nephew.
That's awesome.
So I didn't just stay awesome. In it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, it's okay to feel it, but what are you going to do about it?
That's right. That's great advice. Larisha Bonds, man. I mean, you're talking about a story of overcoming, being resilient, a person who fought the system and
took, still fighting,
took the fight and is taking the fight and turned it into purpose as well. So again, Larisha, if people want to get a hold of you, what's the best way to do that?
Okay. My website is Larisha Speaks, LYRESHIASPEAKS.com. You'll be able to get my book. You'll be able to, if you are employed at a job and you're facing discrimination and you don't know what to do, I'll help you with those steps. Yeah. I have people who are in law enforcement who don't know what to do. They're angry. I'm trying to help them redirect their anger so they can get a book. I was contacted by a Hollywood producer making my book into a movie before my book was finished.
Yes.
So I can help you with that. It could be like my sister wants to start a cleaning business. Okay, so this is what you need to do. Yeah. You know, so I'm a consultant. I do that. But Larisha Speaks has everything. Bonds Consultant on IG or Larisha Love on Facebook.
That's awesome. She's made it very, very easy for you to contact and reach out to her, follow her, and be ready for that movie to come here soon as well. So Larisha, we talked about some tough stuff. You ready to have a little fun?
Yes.
All right. So this portion of our podcast is called our Rapid Fire Purpose Questions. I'm going to ask you a number of questions about purpose. I want you to give me and the audience your most concise answer. Are you ready? Look, she's like concise. Yeah, concise answer. All right, you ready?
Yes.
Okay. Right. First question: what gives your life meaning?
My kids.
Yes.
My kids, being a parent.
Yeah. What one word best describes you?
Capricorn.
All right, there you go. What problem do you want to solve in our world?
Unifying my people.
Yes.
Yeah. Unifying my people.
What was your favorite thing to do as a kid?
Talk.
Okay. All right. What do you wish you had more time to do?
Eat and eat. I like to eat.
Like to eat? You don't have enough time to eat?
I'm an eater. Like, I just got these braces before, you know, I knew I was going to be a motivational speaker. I got my braces and everything, but I miss food. Like.
Got to get that food in. That's right. That's right. What does your 15-year-old self imagine you'd be doing right now?
Talking. Being an attorney, talking, fighting for people. Yeah.
Yeah. Living your purpose. Right. Who inspires you the most?
Who inspires me the most? Living in the past?
Either. Any of them.
Dr. King, his birthday is the day before mine. His day birthday is the day after mine. Mine, January the 14th. And growing up, knowing that one person can honestly make a difference, being just a regular, smuggler person, just saying you can't, doing this is wrong, Dr. King.
Yes, I love it.
And Malcolm X.
I love it. Good. What's something about yourself we might be surprised to know about you?
Oh, I'm a comedian.
Comedian.
Yes. I started my comedy business with the comedy school. I think I'm funny, so if you laugh, thank you. Oh, Dirty Jersey is my comedy name. I started my production company. So yeah, I'm a comedian.
She's doing all kinds of things. I love it. I love it. What's on your bucket list to do within the next year?
My bucket list in the next year is so much. I want to be on like interviewed by Good Morning, The View. I want to be Whoopi Goldberg. Like Whoopi Goldberg interviewing me about my situation. Because again, I'm a comedian. So Whoopi Goldberg interviewed me on The View.
Awesome. So Whoopi, if you're listening out there, hey, put my girl in, all right? What's something you'll spend your time doing no matter what?
Talking.
Okay. What do you want your grandchildren to say about you someday?
That my grandma can cook.
There you go. Throw down in the kitchen. There you go. If you were a superhero, what would your superpower be?
If I was a superpower? All of the racist people, you'd be out of here. It'd be a wrap. No more racism. It'd just, if you don't like somebody, you don't like them, but it'd be no more racism.
Okay, there you go. No more racism. What sparks your creativity?
Laugh, making people laugh, joking, funny. I'd be laughing at stuff they don't be. I'd be talking to myself, like comedy, really, like. Like everything I try to find humor in, I make jokes and comedy. I really want to get into that for
real. Awesome. It sounds like your next adventure there as well. So if you became president today, what law would you pass first?
Oh, I would pass a law that all the laws that are in place that white people don't follow, that they would have to follow, or they would no longer be a law. Ain't no law for a certain amount of people with no law for everybody else. No.
Everybody got to follow the same laws. There you go. If you could follow someone around for a day, who would it be and why?
Follow around for a day. Follow around for a day? I don't know. I would follow probably, yeah, I don't know. That's a good one. I don't know. Who would I follow around? Okay, come back to me with that one.
All right. What's been the best compliment you've ever received?
That my book, the ideas in my book, the theories that I'm raising should literally be taught in colleges and universities based off, and the fact that they're so new and the perspective of it, why isn't everybody not talking about these ideas? And, you know.
I love it. I love it. It's a great compliment. What's been the one thing you have never been afraid to do?
Talk. I talk to strangers, I talk to anybody, everybody. A lot of times people get scared or emotional, whether I have an audience or not. Like, and it's a fear for people, but it's not for me.
That's awesome. What moment from your childhood are you most proud of?
Literally not being able to read in eighth grade or having a problem with that and not being the best student. I graduated the bottom 25% of my high school class. And struggled a lot with getting the grades and doing that, but still going to school, getting my degree, taking me 6 years to graduate, and really overcoming that. Because, you know, they read out loud. Who?
Yeah.
But
good for you. That's awesome. I love it. I love it.
Bottom 25%.
Yeah. Overcomer for sure. What does success look like for you?
Success looks like for me, people hearing my story, understanding my story, and me bringing attention to what's going on with my nephew and having an investigation done.
Yes.
You know, that'll be success.
Yes. What are you most grateful for?
I don't want him to know this, but my husband.
Yes. Okay. Shout out to your husband. What's husband's name?
I don't want to say
it. Oh, I say his name. Come on now, Luis. Put him out there.
No, I don't want to say it, but my husband. It's for a reason why I can't say it, but.
Okay. All right. Shout out to her husband, man. That's awesome. That's awesome. What's been the biggest lesson you have learned in life?
That I honestly thought as a that I was free, or that as an African American person, times have changed and they have not.
Okay. That's awesome. You know. Yeah. A lot of work to be done in there. And last but not least, Larisha, how do you want to be remembered in history?
Fannie Lou Hamer. My therapist calls me Fannie Lou Hamer. Fannie Lou Hamer Jr. Uh-huh. Like a fighter. Shirley Chisholm, I already know I'm in the history books because that, but I want to be a fighter, a person who fought, you know, and not because it would benefit me in any way, but because the fight for my people. The Middlesex County is the same county that illegally incarcerated Asana Shakur, the county that I work for. And I believe Black women were treated that way because what happened to her and the egg on their face because she got away. So now anytime, three Black women are currently suing them right now for discrimination. Three in the same county as Asana Shakur. It ain't an accident.
Yeah.
So absolutely that.
History in the making. I love it. I love it.
Who I want to follow around? Kevin Hart. Kevin Hart. I'm a comedian. And he does it. Kevin Hart. I love you, Kevin.
Yeah. He's a good pick right there. So the response, you survived. Give yourself a round of applause. Awesome job. Hey, folks out there again. Larisha, if people want to get a hold of you, what's the best way to get a hold of you again?
LarishaSpeaks.com.
There we go. Maybe very, very easy for you as well. So last thing, Larisha, as we wrap things up here, our podcast centers on two things, purpose and resiliency. What last words can you leave our audience with around purpose and resiliency?
Your purpose is whatever you can do to help others. You have to understand that this is not about just me, because I'm getting the check. I'm suing. I have lawsuits. I'm getting the settlement. But the purpose, what can you do for anybody else? You can't take that. I've never seen a hearse followed by a Brent's truck.
Yeah.
No way. You can't take it with you. Yeah. So understanding your purpose is really, what can you do for others? We know what you can do for yourself. And the resilience is things are going to happen. It's called life.
Yeah.
So you can't be, oh, this happened to me. Woe is me. as things happen to everybody, but what are you going to do about what happened to you makes the difference in resilience.
Yes.
And that's what you have to focus on. Because you'd be surprised, the stuff that happened to me, my brother murdered 2 months after being fired, my uncle's funeral, my nephew being in life, it's called life, is going to happen. What are you going to do about it?
Yes. I love it. Hey, folks, I hope you guys have been inspired by Larisha Bond's story. Follow her. We want you to subscribe to our podcast, Resilient Stories. Download this episode, rate it, share it with your folks on social media. If you're someone out there, you're an overcomer, you have an amazing story, we want to hear from you, please go to tawatson.com, share your story with us. Everyone else out there, God bless, and thank you for joining us. Peace and deuces, everyone.
Yours truly,
thank you so
Dr. Watson.